Crossing the grounds back to the ward, McMurphy lagged back at the tail end of the bunch with his hands in the pockets of his greens and his cap tugged low on his head, brooding over a cold cigarette. Everybody was keeping pretty quiet. They'd got Billy calmed down, and he was walking at the front of the group with the black boy on one side and that white boy from the shock shop on the other side. I dropped back till I was walking beside McMurphy, and I wanted to tell him not to fret about it, that nothing could be done, because I could see that there was some thought he was worrying over in his mind like a dog worries at a hole he don't know what's down. One voice saying, "Dog, that hole is none of your affair. It's too big and too black, and there's a spore all over the place as bears or something just as bad." And some other voice coming like a sharp whisper out of way back in his breed, not a smart voice, nothing cagey about it, saying, "Sick 'em, dog, sick 'em." I wanted to tell him not to fret about it, and I was just about to come out and say it when he raised his head and shoved his hat back and speeded up to where the least black boy was walking and slapped him on the shoulder and asked him, "Sam, what say we stop by the canteen here a second so I can pick me up a carton or two of cigarettes?" I had to hurry to catch up, and the run made my heart ring a high, excited pitch in my head. Even in the canteen, I still heard that sound my heart had knocked ringing in my head, though my heart had slowed back to normal. The sound reminded me of how I used to feel standing in the cold fall Friday night out on a football field, waiting for the ball to be kicked and the game to get going. The ringing would build and build till I didn't think I could stand still any longer. Then the kick would come and it would be gone and the game would be on its way. I felt that same Friday night ringing now and felt the same wild stomping up and down impatience. And I was seeing sharp and high-pitched too, the way I did before a game and the way I did looking out of the dorm window a while back. Everything was sharp and clear and solid like I forgot it could be. Lines of toothpaste and shoelaces, ranks of sunglasses and ballpoint pens guaranteed right on them to write a lifetime on butter underwater, all guarded against shoplifters by a big-eyed force of teddy bears sitting high on a shelf over the counter. McMurphy came stomping up to the counter beside me and hooked his thumbs in his pockets and told the sales girl to give him a couple of cartons of Marlboros. "Maybe make it 3 cartons," he said, grinning at her. "I plan to do a lot of smoking." The ringing didn't stop until the meeting that afternoon. I'd been half listening to them work on Seafelt to get him to face up to the reality of his problems so he could adjust. "It's the Dilantin," he finally yells. "Now, Mr. Seafelt, if you're to be helped, you must be honest," she says. "But it's gotta be the Dilantin that does it. Don't it make my gums soft?" She smiles. "Jim, you're 45 years old." When I happened to catch a look at McMurphy sitting in his corner. He wasn't fiddling with a deck of cards or dozing into a magazine like he had been during all the meetings the last 2 weeks, and he wasn't slouched down. He was sitting up stiff in his chair with a flushed, reckless look on his face as he looked back and forth from Seafelt to the big nurse. As I watched, the ringing went higher. His eyes were blue stripes under those white eyebrows, and they shot back and forth just the way he watched cards turning up around a poker table.